Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
At the point that I was blown up, I was sure I'm going to be the next Frank Zappa. I was sure I'm going to be this incredible musician, write music for everyone. I left the hospital. I barely could keep my left arm. They wanted to amputate it. Doesn't work very well today either. I have lots of bullets and shrapnel stuck in my body still. My hearing, I lost most of my hearing. I left the hospital with an identity crisis. If I'm not a musician, then what am I? I met half a brother of my father, and he was a painter. And he changed his career when he was 50. And I admired him for making such a change so late in life. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just 21. Maybe I can make a change like that. And I love painting. And I thought, maybe I can be a painter too. So I went and bought all the paints, all the canvases, all the paper, all the medium that I could find in the biggest art supply shop in Tel Aviv. I spent the first night with them. I think the first hour was painting 18 hours straight. Took a bottle of wine on my balcony and they started looking at the canvas. And I was so afraid of painting, I started by writing my poetry on the canvas and then painting whatever it made me feel. After that night, I decided I'm going to be a painter. I'm a painter. For me, I thought, you know, I found the language that I love and it speaks to me.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Omer, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for inviting me.
It is my pleasure to have you here. So you are one of a long line of people who has been referred to me by our former guest and mutual friend, Michael Shine. Everybody refers as awesome, so no pressure at all. But I wanted to start by asking you, what is one of the most important things that you learned from one or both of your parents that have influenced and shaped your values and what you've ended up doing with your life?
Well, those are a compact question you started with. I think something I learned from my father pretty much shaped the way I see the world. He told me at a very young age, I think I was maybe 6 or 8 years old, I asked him if there was God. Everyone talking about God, and I was kind of curious because he was not really interested. He's never taking us to do all the Jewish holidays that my mother was into. And so I was asking him, you know, is there a God? And he said, what do you care? I don't know. It's a topic, you know, people talk about it. He said, you don't need to worry about things that are not in your control, how the world started and if there is God or there isn't. All you need to know is that you need to be a good person. And to be authentic and live your life and think about the future and think about live the present. And don't worry about anything that is outside your scope. And I think that kind of for many years, every time that I was thinking, you know, getting into arguments, if I'm an atheist, really I learned that I'm agnostic. I just for sure right now, no one has proven to me, this, there is God. So I just prefer not to have a strong opinion about it currently. And I think that view, you know, not worrying too much about things that are outside your control, really shaped me as a person, and became a strong lighthouse, I guess, for me.
You know, it's funny because I think of all the great illusions that human beings have, control might be the biggest one of all. The idea that we're in control of almost anything that happens, other than our own actions. And yet people try to impose control over their lives in so many different ways. Tell me about the ability to develop that capacity, because I think that that's such a, like, it's one thing to say it, right? But it's another to actually live it.
True. And you know what? I'll tell you this about, like, I'll tell you about how I met Michael. I met Michael through Launch Club. It's a networking app that introduces you to random people. Have you heard about it?
No, I haven't. I'm going to have to download it.
It's a cool web app, and I'll send you a link after this. I'm a great believer in randomness, and I believe that when I, you know, when you increase randomness in your life, good things happen. So I'm on this app for like maybe 6-7 years, and I use it maybe once a month. And every time that I open up, I'm starting a new path in my life, I'm beginning a new project, start a new company or anything like that, I also try to increase my randomness kind of factors in my life. So I would go running in different trails. I would go to different gyms. I would work from different cafes and work in co-working spaces. I would do a lot of networking events, and I would use more Lunch Club meetings that kind of introduced me to random strangers. I would do this maybe twice a week or once a week. And I believe that, you know, it takes practice. I'm a control freak. All I said is that I'm not worried about things that are outside my control, but I believe that most of the things are in my control. So you develop it by trying to develop some healthy mix between randomness and to really try to understand what is under your control, what it is, the things that you can impact with your existence.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this, you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Well, I want to come back to that, but I want to talk about growing up in Israel. A couple of questions come from that. One, when you're looking at the state of that region of the world right now, particularly having grown up there, what do you make of the situation? Two, what do we not see? What does the media, how does the media distort our perceptions of what is happening in that region of the world? And talk to me about the advice your parents gave you about making your way in the world. Is it kind of like the standard Indian, you know, go do something stable, doctor, lawyer, engineer narrative?
Oh my God, no. No, my father is a photographer. He's a war photographer. I think that it's, wow, it's one of those things that everything there is outside of control. He's an artist in his soul, right? He takes pictures of the muse, but he likes the frame, like the picture, like the art of taking those photos, and being in those moments. So I don't think that control for him, you know, for him, control is work. You know, if you, while you're working, you're in control. And so I don't know if it's similar to, you know, the Indian way of getting a good job. My parents definitely warned me to have a career in something. They discovered that I'm good with computers, that they hoped that I would have a career in computers. But when I told them I'm going to be an artist, my life is going to be creative. And I think my father was skeptical. My mother was supportive. Like she's always been, she's a very supportive person in my life. And, but they also want me to be stable, to have some stability, in life. I think that's about that. And like in terms of growing up in Israel and what's happening there today, well, first of all, I'm biased. I'm Israeli. Yes. So there's no question about bias here. But I think I carry some unique perspective about what's happening today. When I was growing up, my father is, even though he's right wing, is all of his friends are Palestinians. He believes in he's a Zionist. He believes that Israel should belong to the Jewish people, but he also believes in coexistence and believes in that we are able to live together. Zionism, at least in our version of it in the family, is still having a country that is multicultural and where everyone can coexist and live together. But at the same time, it's also a place for Jewish people to be able to come from all over the world and find refuge in. So I was growing up, I was very interested in the Jewish undergrounds that kind of led to the establishment of Israel as a country as we know it today. When I was 18, I was drafted to the army. I'm sure you're aware that the army is mandatory in Israel. Yeah. you know, so it wasn't really a choice whether I'm going to the army. It was just something that everyone does, or they go to jail. So I chose the army. When I was 20, I was a musician at the time, and there's one weekend that I was at home recording some music, and on this Friday morning, I got a call from a friend and said, do you want to come up with me and spend the weekend at the base somewhere in the West Bank? You're going to have fun and enjoying with some friends, right? And she convinced me to join them and volunteer to help them doing their duties and so on. We went there. We were sitting in this cafe in the West Bank when this 20-year-old guy, he stood up. He went towards the bus station. Which was kind of odd because it was super hot. It was like 104. And as I was thinking about why is he going outside of the shade, you know, towards the bus, he hugs me from behind. He puts me in an embrace, say something in my ear, and he detonates himself. He had 15 pounds of explosives in a school bag that he carried, that he had between him and me. And he detonated it and exploded and, it was one of the first suicide bombings in Israel in late 2000. It's a pretty long and gruesome story, but the short of it, I died for a few minutes. Someone came and found me and resuscitated me and kept me alive until an ambulance showed up. And I woke up a month later in a hospital where I spent about a whole year, trying to recover from that. Everyone expected me to be angry, I guess. And maybe at sunset, part of this time I was angry. But I came out of it really realizing that, you know, my father's, right-wing opinions are wrong. That the only way that I can, at least to me, right? The only way that I thought we could stop this mad bloodshed between us is peace. And, you know, I went and did a degree in social studies. I learned a lot about, I took a lot of courses in our history and trying to figure out how the undergrounds, saw themselves in liberating the country and so on. And I realized that even today, after October 7, and I lost friends and family in October 7, it was a disaster from, you know, even after that, I think that the only thing that can save both of our people is peace. And what you see in the news today is that we have leaders that are abusive on both sides. We have leaders that don't lead, that are selfish. And what we don't see in the news today is that there is a huge argument, internal argument in Israel. The prime minister today has maybe 4% approval rate internally. 4%. No one wants him in charge. In trying to overturn this and to stop this war is something that a lot of Israelis are actively working towards. I think there's too much death. There's too much suffering. There's too little achievements in this war, and we're not bringing the hostages back. So, yeah. So I think what people are missing here is that not all Israelis are in the same place. Not all Palestinians are in the same place. And our fights are between a terror organization and a terror government.
Yeah. Well, so. I know about the mandatory military service because I feel like everywhere I've traveled in the world, I meet Israelis who have just finished their military service. So they have a shit ton of money and they're having like the time of their lives. Wow. And so what you mentioned, you know, you chose to, you know, go to the military instead of go to jail. I'm just curious, are there people who try to avoid the service and flee the country?
Yeah, you can't really flee the country. It's not going to help you. What is flee the country? I'm sure there are. There are plenty of people who flee the country if they never wanted to come back. But eventually you would want to come back, visit your family and friends, and, you know, you'll get in and you'll get the jail.
Yeah.
it's not an answer. My wife, my partner is the only person that I know that, that managed not to do the service. And she had her interview and she just said, you know what? It's not you. It's me. I have other plans. I don't think I'm good at taking orders and we would not be a good fit.
Wow. And she got out of like what is mandatory for all citizens by doing that.
And they told her, are you sure it's going to be good for you? You're going to have a lot of opportunities. You're very smart. And she said, yeah, I don't think it's me. I don't take orders. I don't like, I want to travel. I want to do things. I'm not into that very much. And they just let her go.
Wow.
I don't know any single person. I know people like who went to this interview naked and trying to be pretend to be crazy and doing all kinds
of
things.
None of them got out of it.
Like none of them got out of it. They're like, yeah. Either you're going into a mental hospital or you're going into the army. There's no question about it. And so
she's your the wife person that I know. Straight and just basically said, I don't think this is a fit. That's amazing.
She's always been authentic. And I think she was very lucky. And she very often she gets her way.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Well, so you mentioned sort of, you know, this narrative you grew up with. I had a guy named Jonathan Kislev here who was an interdisciplinary artist.
I know Jonathan.
Yeah, I remember that was one of my favorite interviews. And I was like, wait a minute, you're a peace activist who served in the Israeli military. And the story that he shared with me that always stayed with me was when he was a kid, somebody asked him if he wanted to go paint, you know, with some Palestinian kids. And at first he told me, he said, I was scared. He was like, no, he's like, I'm going to get murdered. Those are terrorists. And he said that the thing that taught him was when they came together, these kids, Palestinian and Israeli kids together painted a mural. And it was like, wow. So we can either paint murals or we can build walls between each other.
Mm-hmm. I met Jonathan in one of these events and meetings of the Bereaved Family Circle. It was a group of artists, Palestinian and Israeli artists that met, somewhere in East Jerusalem in Palestine, just the other side of the separation wall. And we've done the weekend together, and I was terrified, to be honest. I was trying to plan a concert on the separation wall with the conductors of Meta and hundreds of musicians and people and participants. And I realized that, you know, we talked about control. I was trying to control everything remotely without getting there on location because I was triggered constantly by my PTSD of getting close to the separation wall. And I sent people to shoot, you know, hours long video on both sides of the wall. And I was starting for location, trying to do everything remotely until I realized I have to, if I really want control, I need to control my PTSD and to allow myself to get close there. Yeah. And so I signed up to this meeting, and we were, you know, I went for all weekend to this place and I asked someone to drive me so I won't be able to get in my car. An escape. I took a bunch of weed with me to calm my nerves down. And I got to that hotel and I locked myself in my room and I was terrified of leaving. And when I actually left, I met the Palestinian artist. It was this, that type of conversation that I had there that got me to realize that how we're more similar than we're different. We are all carrying deep generational trauma from how we were brought up and the decisions that our leaders have done over the past 75 years. And that we, not only that we can, but we should coexist. We can help each other grow. So I agree with Jonathan. That's where I met him. And I think that we can create together. Some of the people that I met there, Palestinian and Israeli, like Jonathan, I'm friends with and I'm in touch with since, you know, it's been 15 years or more since that event.
Wow. Well, so this time in the hospital, a year in the hospital, you know, what seems pretty much like a near-death experience. Tell me something. What decisions did you make then about how you would live your life going forward based on
that?
Being confronted with your mortality so early in your life?
I First off, I would say I couldn't imagine the future. I was so zoomed in into my trauma, into my pain. I was burned in 90% of my body, and I looked like Freddy Krueger. I looked like Mr. Pizza. After 3 months in the hospital, they let me look in the mirror, and I saw what I saw was someone that would leave the hospital and would scare little kids every time he leaves the house. I was more worried about the thing that I've lost and the person that I want to be than being able to come zoom out and see into the future. But I did have one decision, and that decision was not to sit on my ass and postpone things. I remember that, you know, in the week before I got blown up, I was thinking, oh, I want to record this album. But, you know, I don't have much time here, and I can't make it perfect. If I can't make it really perfect, I should rather wait until I finish the album. And I wanted to publish a book. And I thought, well, it takes so much time, the editing, the thing, that I'll do it when, you know, I'll do it later. Everything, you know, I used to postpone things. And laying in the hospital for a year, I read a lot of books and had a lot of conversations with people. And I realized that once I'm back on my feet, I can't postpone things. I'm trying to live as many lives as I can to compact them into one. I think I got lucky and I got a second chance at life. I don't know how many of these I have left. So I want to make the best of the opportunity that I got. And so I appreciate time in a different way. And that's the only decision that I made is to remember to appreciate time and to choose carefully who you're spending.
So I think what strikes me about that, the question that comes to mind is, how do people create that sense of urgency within themselves without having to get blown up by a suicide bomber? Because I feel like so often people will just keep postponing. I see this over and over with people. I remember talking to people who's like, oh, I'm going to write a book. And you'll meet them like months later. It's like, oh, I haven't started. Or I'll give you the best example, the most poignant one. I had two friends. One was a classmate from business school. The other was a friend of mine from high school. The classmate from business school had a really high paying job at a Fortune 500 company. He was doing really well. He wanted to start a business. He had clients lined up ready to pay him. When I met him a month later, he was like, I made a business card. My other friend, my best friend, he got laid off from his job 6 months before his wedding. He had just bought a house with his soon to be wife. And he's been a guest here on the show. A week before his wedding, he put up a video tutorial on how to use Airtable, set up a landing page. He came back, and that first week he had 5 calls booked. That first month he made $10,000. That's, I think, the most poignant example of what we're talking about here. So What is it that causes people to keep delaying? And by the way, I just checked on LinkedIn. The friend who printed the business cards is still working at the same company.
Oh my God. All right. So I always think this is something that separates entrepreneurs from other people. Many people, entrepreneurs, when we have an idea, we fall in loving this idea. We become obsessed. We want to immediately, you know, search how anyone has done this and how it can be done, if it's feasible. We're trying to do something. We put our heart into it very, very quickly. We don't let it go. Many people, they have these limiting beliefs about themselves, right? They think I'm not good enough, or I can't, or this person is great. Greatness belongs to very few individuals. I'm not great. I can't ever make it. I can't be like Elon Musk, like Adam Newman, like whoever entrepreneur that you think about and you think that you can never be as big as them or as great as them. And so why even bother? Those limiting beliefs are actually what's my current business is all about. I think that, you know, people that are stuck and develop these harmful thinking patterns, they convince themselves that they can't, so they don't. And so that's why I think people are getting stuck and don't come out of it. But I also feel like if you are stuck, if you are feeling uninspired, you're going to have a very hard time to find this inner drive to push through. And you can benefit from, you know, from finding this, the power to push your current limiting belief, and to imagine a better future for yourself. And I think that's what people should do to get themselves out of this procrastination and out of the getting stuck phase. of, you know, having an idea, but keep it as a conversation piece instead of actually going out and doing something.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We're talking about being stuck. Britt Frank, who we had as a guest, who wrote a book about the science of stuck. And she said that whether you want to admit it to yourself or not, when you're stuck in some area of your life, there's some gain. You're benefiting in some way from being stuck. Even if that benefit is, hey, I can just complain to somebody about this.
Of course. Of course. But it's still, nevertheless, it's a narrative, right? Yeah. I believe that our brain is programmed with narratives, this little piece of software, of instructions that we give it. And if we convince ourselves that we can't do something, or it's going to be too difficult or too long, or, you know, whatever it is that we tell ourselves about ourselves, eventually this is a little code, a little program that we, you know, that teaches us that we can't do something. Or, you know, you can change that narrative with a better narrative, and create a new set of instructions of what's possible to your brain, which really change your entire perspective of life.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
And speaking of which, walk me through sort of leaving the hospital, the narrative that unfolded in your life and how it brought you to where you're at today.
Leaving the hospital, at the point that I was blown up, I was sure I'm going to be the next Frank Zappa. I was sure I'm going to be this incredible musician, write music for everyone, perform, and doing all that. I left the hospital. I barely could keep my left arm. They wanted to amputate it. It doesn't work very well today either. I have lots of bullets and shrapnel stuck in my body still. My hearing, I lost most of my hearing. And, you know, memories or souvenirs physically that got me to believe that I cannot do music anymore. And that's a narrative that I unfortunately taught myself while I was, you know, hospitalized that, you know, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And when I left, I left the hospital with an identity crisis. If I'm not a musician, then what am I? And, I met half a brother of my father. And he was a painter, and he changed his career when he was 50 from working in a steel plant and to becoming an incredible artist and painter. And I admired him for making such a change so late in life. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just 21. Maybe I can make a change like that. And I love painting. I love watching his painting. I thought maybe I can be a painter too. Maybe painting can be a parallel language to music that I lost. Maybe it's a different way to have some self-expression. Everything I do wholeheartedly, right? So I went and bought all the paints, all the canvases, all the paper, all the medium that I could find in the biggest art supply shop in Tel Aviv. And I spent the first night with them. I think the first time I was painting 18 hours straight. Took a bottle of wine on my balcony and they started looking at the canvas. And I was so afraid of painting. I started by writing my poetry on the canvas and then painting whatever it made me feel. After that night, I decided I'm going to be a painter and I'm a painter. That was for me. I thought, you know, I found the language that I love and it sticks to me and I can, and it's very similar to music and gives me the same type of energy that I was looking for. And I became a painter. And how it unfolded from there, I met my wife through a mutual friend. She was dating a friend of mine. 5 days after we started dating, I proposed her to marry me. We got married a month later. I convinced her that she can be a painter too. And that we can live together as painters. And it's going to be a fun, romantic artist life, which we actually did. We had a very fun and romantic artist life for a decade and a half. And then we moved to the U.S. In 2013 and to conquer the art world. But along the way, we needed the visa to stay here and we needed the sponsor. We didn't know anyone here, so we set up... We set up a tech company to be our sponsor, and now we're doing tech all of a sudden. And I was enjoying it. I was enjoying the entrepreneurship kind of spirit and enjoying building things and inspiring people with my visions for the product that we're building and technology that we're developing. And that became for me. The thing I love doing most, entrepreneurship and art are one of the same. I think entrepreneurs are artists and that's what I love doing since. So I'm building companies since we moved here and I'm enjoying this process very much.
Okay. I got to ask you about proposing to your wife 5 days after we started dating.
I know it would be a point.
There's no way I was going to let that question go. Okay, one, that goes against virtually all conventional wisdom about relationships and marriage. And the fact that you're still married says something. I mean, it literally, I think that people generally would think you're out of your damn mind if you did that. Why did it work?
Yeah. First of all, I take risks, right? Our artists, entrepreneurs are risk takers. I felt like, I fell in love with her. I felt she's amazing. And I thought, you know, I'm enjoying every moment today. And if tomorrow I'll wake up and I'm not happy, you know, I'll say something. And if I wake up unhappy too many days straight, then I have to change and I have to decide that it's not for me anymore. I mean, it's okay to get a divorce. It's okay to break up. It's okay to change your mind about things. Nothing is forever, right? And so, I think that's how we lived. We were happy and we're happy and we're happy. And like, we keep checking in. Are we happy? And if not, then we want to make a change. And usually we change countries, we change careers. And you know what? Not only that we're together for, wow, it's 21 years now, almost 22 years. We were working together this entire time. Painting side by side, building companies together. We spent every minute of every day since that time, together. And I don't know how it works. I was lucky, I guess. She's my everything. I enjoy our relationship. We grow together. We change together. And, it makes us feel good.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that one of the things that I appreciate about your sort of view on the world and also how you think about technology is it sounds a lot like me. You see technology as a tool for making art more than a tool for, you know, like doing the things that we think that it does. And I've always seen technology as sort of a way to express your creativity because this is something that Julian Smith said to me that has honestly been foundational to the way that I think about, you know, the projects that I'm choosing to work on, the things that I want to create. And one of the things he said to me is that every sort of new thing in technology makes something possible that wasn't possible before. And the question you have to be constantly asking yourself is, what does make possible that wasn't before? Because what you see is the intersections of all these technologies that facilitate the next one. And maybe you don't think of it exactly like that, but it sounds to me like you have this very interesting way of blending the capabilities of technology with your own creativity. Talk to me about that.
I think technology, you can develop technology that has purpose and it has business purpose and it's still going to be created. It still can be created. I'm looking at the creativity in my business, today and before is how you're solving problems, right? How you inspire people. And I realized when I look back and I think about 4 months ago, I had a big, again, like I have periodically, identity crisis. As I was looking back and I was trying to think what was in common to everything that I did, every project that I did in my life. What did I like about it? What did I like about painting, about music, about building companies, about, you know, everything that I did? What was in common to all of that was filling me up with energy? And I realized that the most creative part was to inspire people. You inspiring people, not just because you can make the money and not just because, you know, they can see a career or they can see that the solution is great. Inspiring people because you had some idea that they didn't. And you make them believe that they can be a part of it. And you actually make them fall in love with your concept, with your creativity and in a way fall in love with you. And so I feel like my creativity comes, to play here by inspiring people, whether I'm sharing a concept for an innovative technology platform or I'm creating a painting. It's the same feeling for me.
So, and talk to me about the work that you do with this foundation, because I know that we talked quite a bit about sort of dealing with our narratives and deprogramming. Talk to me about, you know, how that happens and what would be the impact if we were to do this at an early age? Because I feel like, you know, sort of emotional intelligence is pretty much left out, or emotional literacy, if we can call it that, is virtually non-existent in the way that we are educated. And I don't think that's just an American problem issue. I think that is a global, you know, like that's pretty consistent globally from everybody I've talked to when it comes to the education system.
Well, first off, I would say we have a lot of global problems that we need to address, right? With this foundation, it's an idea that I had 13 years ago. I thought I was progressing in my work. I was getting, acquiring all kinds of achievements as an artist, as an entrepreneur, and I was never very fully happy. I always thought, oh, I get the one-man show or a solo show in New York. everyone congratulating me, and I feel, yeah, it's okay. I'm raising money for a business, and everyone say, hey, this is great, you did wonderful, and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And I'm feeling like maybe it's my character, maybe I see glass half empty, or maybe my past is kind of holding me back. Maybe the fact that I'm not living my authentic self, maybe the fact that I'm not living who I was meant to be, the musician that I was meant to be, everything seems a little bit, today. And I thought, what if I had this machine that I can ask it a simple question? What if I didn't die? What if I didn't serve the military at all? Maybe getting exposed to this alternative outcome can relieve some of this obsession, some of this fear of missing out that I have towards my past. And maybe that would help me to accept it and to let it go and kind of look forward. And so I was 13 years ago, I asked a friend about it. Like, he was the smartest AI person that I knew at the time. And he told me it's impossible to build a machine that can give you a forecast of your what could have happened. And so just forget it. And I let it go, but I didn't really forget it. And over the years, I keep trying to ping him and get him to come and join my startups. And he was always busy in working on big corporations and so on. And about 4 months ago, in the beginning of October, I managed to get through to him. And I thought, you know, I want to build this machine that could inspire people, not just by accepting their past, but also to look forward and inspire them to find the best version of themselves. And I realized it's trauma and it's depression and it's everyone that feels stuck or uninspired. There's this huge, unprecedented global rise in unhappiness in the world. And I think it reflects this complex interplay of societal, economic, and all kind of individual factors, right? You talked about emotional intelligence, and that's something that was neglected. I think mental health is another area that's been neglected. An average spend of a government on mental health, for example, in the world today is between half percent to 2% of the overall health budget. So we're not really paying a lot of attention to it as society. So I set up together with Tzachi, my friend, to build a tech organization, a nonprofit tech organization that would address this global challenge with a global solution. We're all tech people, so we thought, how can we build a scalable way to reprogram those limiting beliefs, to reprogram those narratives, and tell you a different story? So what if is offering you, will offer you exactly that, a place where you can ask a personal what if question about your past or your future. It could be, what if I didn't die? Or what if I didn't get married? Or what if I had kids? Or what if I had more kids? Or it could be a question about your future. What if I change my career right now and become a chef? What if I would start a podcast? What if I move to a different country? What if I would marry this person or do that thing? And the answer would come in the form of a simulation of that alternative outcome, that alternative reality. And you would see yourself taking control over your life, and you'll have a new sense of purpose, and will strengthen your sense of agency so you can really be a hero in your own story. And we started this in late September, early October, and we're now over 120 people, all volunteers, building this incredible narrative therapy machine that we hope to help people live happier and more fulfilling lives by better understanding and navigating the forks in the world of life. I guess that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
I feel that today, we need to kind of, foster more empathy. And especially in light of what's happening in Israel and Gaza today, and in Ukraine, in Russia, and in Myanmar, and in so many other places around the world, we need to help foster empathy, and we need to help people with their emotional intelligence and personal growth. And personal growth doesn't have to be personal. It can be something that we can be mutually responsible for as a community. And that's what we're trying to do with this platform. We want to help you look forward, we want to help you imagine and to try and figure out what's the best you that you can be.
Well, I think, you know, I understand why Michael referred you to me now. He knows that I'm very much an AI enthusiast, and I actually see, you know, a lot of potential for good here versus the sort of dystopian future view. Like, there are a lot of realities to that. But talk to me from your perspective, like, what are the broader implications of artificial intelligence for society at large and, you know, the individual? Like, where, like, what are they missing, and how does it have the power to empower them, I guess, is really what I'm trying to get to.
In the larger sense, I would hope that AI would help people work less and have more free time. That it will change our lives around from being operational focused to being more, you know, doing the work that the AI can do. We can imagine things in a way that the AI can't imagine. We can dream things and be creative in a way that the AI still can't. And I don't, you know, think it will, get to that point. So I think as long as people keep thinking about AI as a tool, is a means to an end, then that would be the right way to think about it. I think once you think about AI as anything else that can replace you, or you're starting to worry about, you know, different, you know, having an AI girlfriend or things like that, I don't think we need that. I think that we need more time outside machines, and the machine can help us govern the world in a way that it's fair, then Rick, it can help us take agency again.
So it's funny, because one of the primary arguments I've made is that thinking of AI as a tool is actually a very limited way to view it. I mean, based on the work that you're doing, I don't think you actually view it as a tool, because in my mind, my view is that AI should be viewed as a partner, not a tool. And that if you're using it as a tool to increase productivity, you basically are the equivalent of somebody who owns a Ferrari and you drive it on surface streets in a school.
No, I understand what you're saying. I understand why, because, you know, because the biggest difference is that the AI has agency, can make decisions. Yeah. I get that, but it still can be a tool, right? It can still be your chief of staff. Mm-hmm. It can still be your assistant that gives you infinite memory and can do infinite tasks simultaneously and can be, responsible for a lot of different issues, but it's still a machine, right? It's, you can look at it as a partner. If you'd like to give it a personality, great. Give it a personality.
I've done that. I've actually programmed all my custom GPTs with personalities of some of my favorite TV show characters.
Oh, I'd love to have conversations with one of them.
Oh, I'll introduce you after this.
I'd love that. You're right. In a way, if you can use it as a partner, but I just view technology in general as a tool. But it's a very useful tool. Yes, it's a tool that has agency. Yes, it's a tool that can make independent decisions. Yes, it can learn faster than you. It can execute much faster than you. But what I'm saying is a tool. You can use it for things that you not normally. Like for me in the Wari Foundation, you know, I look at it as a self-help tool. It's something that you can do to empower yourself to be a better person or to living a better life. Yes, it has agency. It can make decisions. It can decide how to create this simulation, or how to give you tools to turn your inspiration into action, and which tools and how to, it can make a lot of decisions, but eventually it's a tool that we are building.
Yeah.
We create a purpose for it. And then we give it freedom in confined places.
Absolutely.
I don't give it freedom to do anything that it wants. My AI in the Wari Foundation cannot decide to all of a sudden to change the treatment plan. Right. Or to decide to venture out to different things, and to build its own companies or whatnot. It's still a tool that does what it's designed to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fundamental thing that people forget here is that all this is dependent on human input. And, it's basically the same sort of computer science analogy of garbage in, garbage out. And, you know, because I built a custom GPT model designed to help me craft a dating profile. And, you know, so
like now I use the voice interaction capability of the ChatGPT mobile app, and it's fundamentally changed the way that I interact with ChatGPT, because I've had hour and a half long conversations on a nightly basis that delve, go into, you know, multiple directions. Like I have one that one of mine is basically my goal planning executive assistant. You know, like I basically go through different scenarios and, you know, bounce ideas. It's become this really interesting brainstorming partner that, allows me to do things. But even with the one that I built for, you know, helping me build a dating profile, I remember it started asking me questions and I was like, these questions suck. I was like, why don't you ask me some real questions about my life? And in that process, I basically told it, I was like, we need to update your programming so this interaction gives you a depth that you're not going to get from these bullshit, like, you know, job interview style questions. I think you'll be able to write a much better profile for me by doing that. And so it got to doing that. And I gave it so much information that it came back with profiles. I was like, wow, these are pretty damn good. And so that opened up like a whole like other, you know, thread of ideas and conversations. I think that in my mind, it's one of these really powerful tools for exploration that people, so I separated into two paradigms, what I call the better Google paradigm, in which people primarily see it as an efficiency tool, and the new era of creation paradigm, where people realize that this actually enhances your potential as an artist, as a creator, as an entrepreneur, should you choose to use it in a way that is about far more than doing things faster.
You're absolutely right. And people would use this, you know, I'm building an inspiration machine, and it sounds like you've built your own inspiration machine as well.
I built a few of them.
I want to give this inspiration machine to people for free so I can bridge this gap of people who needs to be inspired and maybe don't know how to approach it. And help people, you know, find a way to help themselves. So I wish more people would know how to use these tools in the right way. I think in terms of mental health and in terms of meaningful emotional intelligence, this requires a new comprehensive and accessible approach. ChatGPT still, or GPT solutions in general, they are still not accessible. Just in the way that, you know, mental health is still not accessible. So I'm trying to aim to bridge those gaps and offering ways that, and a new way that is unique and empowering to, for people to help themselves. And it's not purely machine based. There is a community of humans behind it as well, because the machine would not give you motivation.
Yeah.
The machine will give you inspiration, but it would not give you the motivation. So I think combining machines and people is what gives you inspiration and motivation to go and do something. It sounds like you have a lot of internal motivation, which is amazing and awesome. And, you know, we as entrepreneurs that have this, sometimes we take it for granted. And just like one of your first questions, and how don't people do it? They don't do it because they program themselves to think that they can't.
Yeah.
So we can change that. And those tools, AI today can help that. It can help change your perception. It can help rewire your brain to help change that narrative so you can actually, you know, be empowered to go and help yourself and become better. And then tools like that would be very helpful.
Yeah. So I want to finish with two final questions. You had this incredibly, what by any standard was a traumatic experience, like almost dying. And I've asked people this question in various forms. Why is it that somebody would have the kind of experience you had and respond the way you did, and another person could have a traumatic experience with nowhere as near as much magnitude and yet have a far more disproportionate response?
Disproportionate. I don't know what's the proportionate response for.
Well, okay. So look, I'll tell you, like, to make it a bit more concrete, you have a near-death experience. You have this, you know, like awakening. I had a breakup that made a mess of my head and I went off the deep end. Like that response was, I mean, you know, and the thing is that I think part of that was my own, you know, emotional intelligence kind of needing to develop. But the thing is that that was nowhere as near as traumatic as what you experienced. And yet, like the way I responded, people might think that that's what happened to me.
You know, it's so personal. And first I would say unusual events or circumstance, they lead to unusual responses. And it's normal. I don't think there is, you can put the word proportion into pain. Pain is so personal. And I was burned alive, and the pain that I had was excruciating. But other people had, they delivered a baby and also had excruciating pain. We both have pain, but we looked at this pain differently because it came from different sources, right? So I feel it's the perspective of where you're looking at your pain from. People came on our platform and asked, what if I gave birth to a living baby? What if I met my parents? But the other people, I asked, what if I didn't die? Other people came and asked, what if I went to the wrong business? Right? The pain is still real and it's still painful. And it's ours. It's ours to deal with. I don't think proportion has anything to do with it. It was, this breakup was meaningful for you and it cracked something in your perception of life, on yourself, on your future and what you were thinking about. And it kind of changed a narrative that was in your head, which creates some crisis. It doesn't matter what the event is, if it's dying, suicide bombing, if it's giving birth, if it's experiencing a breakup or getting laid off. Pain is real. What changes things for us, what matters is how we deal with it, how we process it. The only thing that we can really control, we can control our trauma. The only thing that we can control is how we respond to things.
Well, this has been amazing. Now I know why Michael referred you. I've enjoyed talking to you so much. But I have one final question for you, which is how will we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative? What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Unmistakable?
Yeah.
There's something that you see in a person, sometimes that I recognize in a person, this inner drive, this inner beauty that makes them unmistakable creative. There's something that you feel like this person, no matter what you let them solve, they would know how to solve it. You put them in any room, they can own the room. I think being resilient and thinking quickly and listening to your intuition is making you be that person.
Beautiful. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom, and your insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything else that you're up to?
People can find me on mywhatif.org, or as Omer Golan on LinkedIn. And I welcome any questions about our platform. If people want to volunteer, in our beautiful organizations where everyone is a hero, in helping bring mental health solutions to 100 million people in the next 2 years. And people can hit me up in any of the social media sites where they can find me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.